Welcome to Cards Chat, the friendliest poker podcast in town from the world's number one poker community. Hey everyone, I'm your host, Robbie Straczynski. Thank you so much for joining us on episode number 127 of Cards Chat, the friendliest poker podcast in town. Today's guest is the author of poker's first ever graphic novel. Anish Patel began working on a project 14 years ago after watching the 2008 WSOP main event final table. The project eventually ended up being called The Final Nine. And after boatloads of time, effort, and resources invested, it's finally become a reality. On today's show, we'll get to know Anish a little better, learn about his passion project, and more about how this man is to have created such a unique piece of work. Anish Patel, welcome to the Cards Chat podcast.
Thanks for having me, Jorby.
That's good to see you. Folks, you'll be hearing this, I think, around August. We were recording this in July. I literally, maybe just a week or two ago, I got to see you, Anish, in Las Vegas and meet you in person. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. Doing well. Back from Vegas. Trying to get back to the used to on the time difference. So, yeah, all good.
So, and where are you located?
I'm based in London, UK.
Okay. Cool. Nice. Yeah, so it's like... 8-hour time difference for you. It was a good trip overall. You enjoyed yourself?
Yeah, I really did. It's been a while since I've been to Vegas again. The last time I went was 2018, but that was a different Vegas. That was the party. This time it was a completely different visit because I was there to explore the whole WSOP event as well as promoting my book, Final Nine.
Sure. Okay, well, we'll ask you a little bit more in depth about that later on in the show. But we'll start off sort of, I guess, from the inception. You know, the 2008 November 9 final table, that was the inspiration for your book. And that was the first year that the World Series of Poker innovated this November 9 concept. And they instituted a 4-month break after the players made the final table. And that kind of like gave us an opportunity to get to learn who they were, their stories. You know, this is before social media became super rampant. So that was actually extremely helpful for a viewer perspective. Who are these people? So was that the first year that you watched the WSOP coverage on TV, or had you been a poker fan before that?
So it was actually, it was the first time I watched WSOP main event or any type of kind of WSOP event. And, you know, before that, I was playing poker with, you know, house games with friends, sometimes in smaller tournaments, smaller cash games and everything, just to learn what the industry was about as well. But I was a fan of playing the game, really enjoyed it, especially with friends and stuff. We play weekly. And it was funny because I was just at home and I was just changing the channels and I'm like, oh yeah, look, there's poker's on there. I didn't know what it was about. You know, it was just, I didn't know it was a main event. Didn't know what WSOP was about, anything like that. But I just left it in the background. And while I was putting some ideas together, and it was weird, it happened at the same time, putting some ideas together, I was listening in the background and I turned my head around and they were talking about Eastgate and some of the backgrounds and all the other players that were on the table. And they were just talking about how they play, where they're from, what they do as a job, if they have a separate job. And it was quite interesting to see that. And then because of the internet at the time, you know, you start typing in certain keywords like WSOP, the main event, and trying to understand what that is and what the history behind it was. And that's just kind of like, oh, that's just kind of, you know, there was a light bulb just there and then.
That's interesting. So wait, so when you were playing games with your friends in the home games as poker, you treated it and sort of thought it was just this pastime, like, you know, playing checkers, chess. There was no knowledge of this poker world out there.
It was a bit of that, yeah. Like, it was more of the house games, just you know, playing friendly games, having a good banter with friends, talk, you know, having a laugh, winning on hands you're not supposed to be playing, like the 7-2s and random hands like that. And it's always fun to play that with your friends. You play that separate differently against other players. And I knew there was a world of poker there. Okay. But I didn't know how big it was because, you know, I knew that there was an online presence at that time as well, you know, nearly 40,000 plus players on just one single website, online gaming website. And there was like, you know, over a dozen at the time running. So, you know, you times that and you go, wow, that's a lot of players online playing a lot of poker.
Did you play online as well, or was your play limited to just the home games with friends?
It was the home games. I played very small online games, more just kind of the practice, you know. It's very small, limited cash game, small minimum buy-ins and stuff. So just to make sure, see how I perform in those games.
Cool.
Back then, you know, they didn't have like time limits or turbo or anything like that.
For sure, absolutely. I mean, you know, besides, I guess, the playing together with your friends, what was it about the game of poker that, you know, you told yourself, hey, this is pretty cool, I want to actually play? Or was it just, hey, I want to get together with my friends and that's what they're doing?
Yeah, I've always been a fan of kind of gambling. I'm not saying I'm a huge gambler, but I always like to play a bit of cards or roulette. You know, blackjack was one of my favorite games, but it still is. So is three card poker. But that, you know, you can only play those in kind of casinos. You don't really play that with friends. But when poker came in, it was a different environment. People were just sitting around. You're not done in an hour. You're playing for a good 4 or 5 hours, and it just brought in that the friends that I went to school with. We don't see them regular, so this was actually an environment that we got together, and we were playing for 7 years straight on a Tuesday night without
wow.
fail. And it, you know, it's just like, and a lot of people, when we say that to a lot of people outside the group, they're like, wow, that's incredible that you do that. You know, and it's funny enough, it's like we sit down by the end of the day, we always talk about the same old thing, going back to school, whatever, and it's still that casual conversation. We don't play as much as we did before, but we do, you know, we do have a game once a month or so. And it, you know, even if we haven't seen those friends for a long time, it brings back that group together again.
That's lovely. It's such a great thing to have, and you know, something that's really fun to bond over years. I mean, I myself have been playing in the same home game also for over 20 years, and there's nothing like it. It's a very, very special
exactly.
bond you have with your home game friends. Anish, you said that the characters you saw on TV is what got you interested. So as you mentioned, Peter S. Eastgate was the winner of the WSOP main event back in 2008. That was the year that inspired you. Other final table participants included, and I'll just run down, I think my chip counts when they made the final table. Dennis Phillips, yeah. Ivan Demidov, Scott Montgomery, Elon Schwartz, Daru Suharto, Chino Ream, Craig Marquis, and Kelly Kim. You know, those names, you know, if you've been following poker for a long time, they may be like, oh, yeah, to those guys. So among those players, which personalities or characters did you find the most engaging or inspiring?
I think it was a mixture, because when you watch that in November 9 TV show, you know, it was a very edited TV show. It wasn't live or anything like that.
Right.
So I think
wasn't
it was
a stream, right?
Yeah, ESPN, they're the ones who were showing those broadcasts of the main event back then. And while I was watching that again, I went onto YouTube and I started watching some of the kind of pre-day just before the final nine or what was happening. And there was an episode where they kind of introduced the players before the final nine.
Right.
And the way they did that was like they talked to each player, and each of them kind of had a different background, from being a local Vegas person to, you know, a couple of European players. And Dennis Phillips, for instance, he was the chip leader at that time, and he had a lot of attention to him during that break. You know, he was doing interviews, he was throwing the first pitch at a baseball game, and, you know,
sure,
a lot of that. And, you know,
it was a big St. Louis Cardinals fan.
Yeah, so watching those players in between that break kind of got me into understanding each other's players, even especially with the lowest, that, you know, I think it was, I don't remember the name, it was Kim.
Kelly Kim,
yeah, you know, even though he had a very small chip back and they were saying that he's only going to survive a couple of hands, but get to know those type of players, because it could have been a dream that he could have bounced back from those low chips back to making it to the winner. And yeah, it was great. And, you know, it just kind of brought out the, you know, not just the poker players, but the person behind all of that really got me going. Even though 2008 gave me a bit more exposure of that, but the year later in 2009 was a completely different year. Different players, Joe Kadder,
yeah.
David Moon, even
Darvin,
Phil Ivey.
Yeah, I remember the logger from Maryland, right?
Yeah, and then the, you know, the poker pro Phil Ivey, you know,
yeah.
he was on that final table and everyone was rooting for him, you know, being the pro at that time. And if he won that, he's pretty much won everything, you know, and the way they actually, from the introduction of that TV show was like, they were showing Michael Jordan, one of some, you know, some of the best baseball players to soccer players to et cetera. And they were like, can Phil Ivey be the one? And it, you know, that kind of drove me to say, look how they're doing, look how they're doing these kind of programs. And it's so exciting to watch.
Right. So was there sort of like a one-to-one of players that you saw to inspire your characters, or are your characters more like amalgamations of different people you saw playing poker on TV?
Yeah, at the start, it was kind of picking, let me research on like the one-to-one kind of poker players, like Dawg Bronson, Phil Hellmuth, Johnny Chan, you know, many of the other players. And I'm like, oh, let me read their backgrounds and stuff. And everyone had a different background, which was quite exciting.
Right.
But then, of course, it was one of those things that I wanted to select a bunch of characters that not identify to one, but to many. Now, it could be to do with the features of how they look, the background they had, or just the style of poker they played. And that's why I wanted to mix in with the range of characters I had. And so that anyone who picks up the book or reads it, they will go, oh, this is something I played before, or this is what I've done somewhere in my background, so I can relate to these characters.
Sure. So, I mean, obviously, as the audience watching it, what turned these, you know, regular people who just put their pants on the same way you and I do, to a large degree, was the commentators, Lon McCarron and Norman Chad. Yeah. I'm wondering to what extent or what degree did that and what, like, their influence on the broadcast sort of have on you and your development of your characters?
Yeah, you know, they done a great job when doing the commentary on in those shows and stuff. You know, they have their own kind of fun jokes about how they play or how they would play their hands, or they'll bring back, you know, some of the legendary hands that were played similar to what they had on that broadcast, and then just bringing in, you know, certain players on the game. It says, you know, Pierre Eastgate's from, I think, believe he was from Denmark, you know, so, you know, bringing those things in, and you hear these things, and it's good to get those insights even during those games while they're playing the hands. And yeah, when they talk about the hands they were folding or playing or shouldn't have folded, you know, it kind of drives that to say, oh, you know, it's quite entertaining to just sit there and watch. And
right.
And I love, you know, people poker is a longevity game. It's not, you know, a quick game. Yeah, even though the shows can be cut down, but so many sports around the world that you watch are very slow. Some people don't like the slowness. I prefer the slowness. I like the techniques of even if they're just sitting on the table and just thinking, and you're trying to understand what are they thinking about, even though we know what cards they have and what's on the flop and what their opponent has because of the edited shows. But
right.
when you watch this live, what are they thinking? And that kind of drives it.
Right, for sure. Okay, so you were inspired by the broadcast. We talked about that at length, but, you know, to properly do this, you need to do, you know, on the ground research. So you went to Las Vegas, you flew there from the UK numerous times over several years. And I'm kind of wondering, that's such a unique kind of question, but like, what sort of research do you do? What type of activities are involved in like a research trip to Las Vegas, but like a genuine research trip?
Yeah, it was funny that 2008 year was my first time I went to Las Vegas. And this was just before I even thought about the book itself. And I've always been a fan of Vegas because I've been reading about it in books, articles, or watching certain shows, and they always talk about Vegas.
Right.
But when it came to you know, when it came to poker in Vegas, I knew there was poker existed, because when you hear Texas Hold'em, you just think Texas Hold'em being in Texas, not the home of poker is actually Vegas and downtown where it all kind of began. So it was interesting to see all of that, you know, the big hotels, the small hotels, just the, you know, all these poker rooms across each of these hotels and casinos was really, really interesting to see. And until, I think, you know, as I said, many times I've been there, the time I actually went was 10 years ago, 2013, and where the Rio was hosting the event. at that time, and seeing that big room with all those tables and all the hearing of poker chips being listening to those and just
unforgettable sound for sure.
Yeah, it's amazing, and seeing just rows and rows and rows, and you're just like, wow, this is overwhelming. But you know, that's kind of where the drive came to say, okay, you see certain things on images or videos, but until you don't see it live, it's you know, how do you write that down? That's kind of what I wanted to grab, was, you know, the size of the event. What are people doing during that event in the media side of things, the commentary side of things, production side of things, and seeing that was, you know, that's what what I wanted to grab, and you know, sit there and just watch a table, just see how they play live without TV coverage was a great insight as well.
So were you just sort of like walking around and taking it in with your eyes and ears, or did you literally have like a notepad and go up to people and ask them questions, go up to media folks and, you know, say, hey, what is it that you're doing? Like, to what degree was it more intensive than passive?
Yeah, it was very very a quiet research thing. Mm-hmm. I wasn't hassling players. I'm still a nobody in the poker world at even at that time, or even now, because I don't play. I'm a part-time player, so trying to understand or I wasn't talking to a lot of people. But once I got to speak to a few people, and someone introduced me to Chad Holloway at that time, and that's kind of where I, you know, got to understand the media side of things, you know.
Yeah.
He was interested in comic books as well, because at that time I actually released issue one or chapter one at that time, and but then going to see it, because the idea was to go to in 2013, yeah, to do some further research, but also trying to get some acknowledgement for the, you know, what I'm planning to do with this book. And even though I wasn't going approaching to different players or directors or anything like that, I luckily found a person like Chad Holloway, who was really involved in the poker world and loving comic books. That's a good start, and I've kept that that communication with him since.
Yeah, well, he's definitely a good dude, very good friend of mine. Shout out Chad. That's actually 10 years since he won his bracelets.
Exactly.
I guess that was the year you were there, and he's known, besides his great media work, he did the World Series of Zombies, I believe, was his.
Yes, that's right.
Was his comic book. Good dude. Well, Anish, you know, folks, if you're watching on YouTube, you can see it here. You gave me a copy of the Final Nine when we were in Las Vegas together just a few weeks ago at the WSOP. You were there to promote it. What have, you know, now that people actually have like a book in their hands, what have some of the reactions been to it thus far?
Yeah, it's been very positive, really positive stuff. Well, you know, the difficult part of being there, one of the difficult part was, again, because I'm a part-time player, people don't know who I am as an individual, or even, you know, in the poker world, I'm very low ranked anyway. But when you discuss something like a comic book to someone, they're like, okay, that makes sense. But when you actually show it physically and they turn the pages, that's when their eyes will kind of opened up, and that's where the positivity came through.
You keep talking, and for those of you on YouTube, I'll just show a few of the images. Go ahead.
Yeah, and you know, I approached some of the main the directors of the WSOP, and I showed them the book, and when they were flipping through they just said, wow, this is amazing stuff. And even when they walked away, you know, I gave them a copy and said, look, it'll be great that, you know, for you to read it. You know, there was a, you know, at that time I was like, would they accept it? You know, because I based the book about the main event, the WSOP and stuff. Will they accept it? They're like, oh, wait, you're taking our ideas. But they actually did really accept it. And they're really fond of that. Something different they were seeing in about poker, but in a different format, which they really liked. And the idea was to make sure the book was colorful. It was, you know, showing the poker hands and everything. Jack from the WSOP, I handed the book to him.
Oh, Jack Apple, really? Wow. Okay.
Yes, yeah. He was busy doing interviews and stuff, and I grabbed him for that 30 seconds. I'm like, do you mind if I show you this book? And it was funny because he was turning pages. He goes, oh, but am I in the book? And I'm like, yeah. So I turned to this page over here, and I might bring this up, and don't want to give away too much of the story, but sure. I wanted to Let's see if I can find it quickly.
Sure. And for those who don't know, Jack Effel, he's the, I think his title is officially the vice president of the World Series of Poker.
So if you look over here, he,
oh, yeah.
And it looks exactly like him. And he's like, that's me, right? And I'm like, yeah. And,
by coincidence, of course.
By coincidence. And but then, you know, once I, you know, finished the conversation, he went back to his team and he was still flicking through the book and everyone's asking, and I'm watching it, and people in, while he's flicking, everyone's like, oh, what you got there? And he goes, oh, this book, this guy just handed it over. And
oh,
people
nice.
Were like, wow. So I went back to him. I'm like, oh, Jack, can we just get a picture? I've forgotten to get a picture with you. So I wanted to make sure I got a picture. And then I started speaking to his team and it kind of grew from there. And everyone got interested in the idea. And that was just one, you know, I was doing that throughout my visit there, you know.
That's lovely. Kind
of going through it. Of course, it was tough because a lot of people were playing the game and I don't want to disturb them while they're playing the game, especially when if they've been pretty much knocked out. You don't want to really say,
right,
oh,
of course.
You know, because they're pretty upset when they've just been eliminated from the tournament. But,
Sure.
you know, but the positive thing was that everyone was quite friendly. You know, it was, I could go to anyone and just say, you know, have you got 30 seconds or whatever time, just to show, let me show you this. And that was just with players, as well as the media press as well. They really were up for, you know, seeing the book. And I'm like, look, you know, I know everyone's busy, but here's a copy, have a read. Please, you know, if you're interested in communicating later on, please do. And that's what I'm hoping for, really.
That's lovely. I'm glad to hear it. You know, kudos to all the friendly faces at WSOP. You were in Las Vegas for a little while. I mean, you can't have been there and not played at all. Did you play?
I did.
Okay.
I did actually enter the biggest main event in history, you know, over 10,000
really?
Entries.
Okay.
So I literally flown in on 4th of July. As soon as I arrived, I went to have a look, took a quick 2-hour nap, and then I thought, all right, let's just join the tables.
So you were one of 10,043 entrants.
Yes. And it's great, you know, being part of that history. You know, it's amazing to, I knew it was going to be big. I didn't realize it was going to be that big. And
right.
Every kind of record. Yes, and I did play in a few hours on day one B. And then I had a few days off and then joined the day two A, B, and C it was at that time. Unfortunately, it was a great table. I actually really liked the table I was sitting on. Everyone was having a conversation. We were talking about poker and just generally other stuff. They were like, oh, they were quite interested.
Uh-huh.
But the poker player was not on my side that day. All the pre-flop hands I was getting weren't great, so it was very difficult to play those.
Sure, of course.
Block them here and there when you got some really good players there with great hands. When I look back at that time, there was, yes, the idea for me was to be there as long as I could.
Mm-hmm.
And try to, of course, you know, and do well playing poker, but it was all about the promotion of the book as well.
Interesting. So was this your first ever bracelet event that you'd entered?
Yes, it was.
Oh,
it
that's
was.
So
I went
cool.
For the big one. Yeah.
Wonderful. I'm glad you had a good positive experience. Did you manage to cross paths at the Felt with any, you know, notable players? Sorry to those who aren't as notable, but just wondering if you want to throw out some names.
Yeah, I mean, one of the main one I did come across was Chris Moneymaker. He was there.
Oh, wow.
And I got to speak to him and show him the book, and he was quite excited about that as well. So, Chris Moneymaker, again, 20 years ago, he won his bracelet.
Right.
That changed up the whole poker industry when because of an online player coming in or a satellite player coming in to win that tournament. And then that's what, after that, the numbers grew. So it's
sure.
A great story to tell. And it was great to see him there. I did see some other players around, like Jamie Gold. He was sitting right behind me, but of course couldn't really have a conversation because of
sure.
The game playing and stuff. And of course, because of the breaks you get, I'm glad they have breaks, but that 20 minutes or half an hour, everyone's running out. They're going to, you know, trying to grab.
Gotta go to the bathroom. Yeah, sure.
Just to relax and just try to refocus. And again, but the amount of people just walking in and out, especially
yeah.
At that break time, it just felt something completely different.
Right.
But, you know, being patient and stuff. But yeah, I got to try and meet as many people, but it was my first year there competing
sure.
And really promoting the book. So if, in the future, get me planned, I can plan that better, I reckon.
Cool. Cool. Well, since you got the shout outs to Jamie Gold, Chris Moneymaker, folks, this is episode 127 of the Cards Chat podcast. If you want to hear Chris Moneymaker, that's episode 15. And if you want to hear Jamie Gold, that was episode 64. We've been fortunate to have a number of main event champions here on the podcast. If you haven't heard them yet, be sure to go back and watch or listen to them. My understanding, Anish, like you had said, you'd sort of released that first issue. You know, you had originally set out to write a singular comic book, but eventually that expanded and it became this 13 issue series, which you combined into this, you know, a graphic novel. I'm kind of wondering, how does an idea develop into something that comprehensive? And sort of as a creator, what allows your vision to keep expanding beyond that initial vision of, okay, I'll do like just a book, you know what? No. And slowly more layers and layers keep getting added to the point where it becomes this whole graphic novel.
Yeah, I mean, it was back then, I was still new to not just the poker world, but the comic book world as well, or even writing at that time. So I'm trying to, you know, understand how to write a comic book was new to me. So I'm doing a lot more, besides doing a research on poker, the characters, poker players, and Vegas and everything, I also was doing a lot of research on how to create a comic book as well at the same time. Being a fan of comic books since I was a child, but once I got into a few years before 2008, I started reading graphic novels. Mm-hmm. And that really drove me to saying, okay, this, you know, I do still like reading graphic novels. They give out that artwork, the writing was absolutely amazing. And when it came to the idea, I was like, okay, I knew how I want. It was a quick instant thing, was like, I knew that I wanted to create a book about poker. Mm-hmm. I knew that I wanted to write about not just one character, but nine.
Right.
And I knew what the end goal was and what I wanted to do in between. Just putting all the brief pitches around and the ideas in, but then how to actually fill those pages up with what kind of characters, that took a while to do. But from that, when you know, I was trying to understand how I was, you know, I was new again, as I want to know, how do I publish this? Do I write my first manuscript and then send it out to publishers or literary agencies? Again, because I was an unknown person, you know, they're going to pretty much say, sorry, great idea, but nothing, not for us at the moment. And then I thought, let me, you know, scrape some money together and just do the first issue or do the first two chapters. Okay. At least I've got something as a hard copy that, yeah, I can present to people, to say, you know, I am being serious about what I'm doing, and it's not just a kind of a pipe dream. I've, you know, done my research, I'll put everything together, and even though it's only the first couple of issues or first couple of chapters, here you go, there's more to follow.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of the drive. Over that time, there was a transition between being hard copy and digital. A lot of people going from in that time, you know, from magazines to newspapers and everything was kind of dropping off, and everything was very digital based. So again, at the beginning, it was going to be just a digital format comic book at the time, and I was going to do releases of each individual chapters. You know, it wasn't going to be like a book, as a one off book. But then, during that, after years later, since kind of then, you know, the online TV streaming companies have come out, like Amazon and Netflix and all the other companies that are kind of competing,
right,
what they did now was, even though it's a TV streaming thing, what they did was every time they put a show on, they just put all the episodes on so people can just watch
right.
it.
Right, so just binge, right?
Binge, right? And sometimes they do... Some shows do it like a weekly base, some do it as a binge. Even if it's a weekly thing, people end up just, you know, recording those shows and then watch it after 6 weeks or something. I was like, okay, I'll binge watch the six episodes and then watch the next bunch. And I thought, okay, I think that's where people's understanding of watching or reading now was different. So I was like, why instead of doing it individually, because people can buy one or two or three, but they might say, oh, you know what, I can't be bothered reading four, five and six, or I won't purchase it or anything like that. And I'm always wanting to say, actually, you, that's where the story starts, kind of thing. So
sure,
I want them to do that.
It's so fascinating to hear that. I mean, honestly, on a personal level, that even resonates, because I had the good fortune of translating Eli Elezra's biography from Hebrew into English. And I remember as well, you know, it was already a published book in Hebrew, but we were, you know, we needed to look for a publisher in English. And the strategy was precisely the same thing of let's translate a few key chapters, let them know, hey, this is what we'd like to do. And then, you know, hopefully we'll get a publisher and then, you know, continue on with the entire project. And I got to say also, again, folks, you know, we'll say it's so easy, just a throwaway line. Oh, 14 years is a long time. It takes so much dedication, drive, and devotion to a project to see it through. And it's so instructive and honestly, just very inspiring to hear, you know, how you persisted. You believed in this and, you know, you didn't really have a template to look to. There was, you had to, a lot of trial and error, a lot of, you know, failure, imagine, along
yeah,
the way.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely a lot of roller coaster so journey there. Yeah.
And also just say, like, you touched upon how, you know, the world and the way we consume media changed over this 14-year period from 2008. You know, the game of poker has changed. Anyone who's been around for a while will also tell you, you know, poker's gotten tougher. You know, a lot of these changes happened as you're continuing to develop. Even, you know, there's no longer a November 9. That concept was discontinued. You know, with all of these changes happening, the world is dynamic and you still got this vision. Did that vision change or did you kind of tweak your ideas over time because of that?
Yeah, definitely. It was the original idea was the book was going to start with the final 10 and the player gets picked out, so it becomes kind of the final 9. Uh-huh. And the idea was the November 9 format, you know, the characters go on their 4-month break and then they'll come back to Vegas to compete in that final table. One of the stories I had in between that was one of the players will, during that break, he'll go to a world tour, you know, playing poker in different countries like that in that 4-month break. But then since the change happened, I think it was in 2016 when they stopped the November 9,
right?
I was like, oh, that changes something in my book.
Yeah.
and I actually produced at that time was 4 chapters. Comic book chapters at that time, and there was thinking going on, do I launch it with this? And I kind of took a break from it. I was struggling. The original artist that was involved, he lost the passion on the project as well, so it was quite difficult. So I had to go and look for a new artist, and I had to get an artist that will kind of just pick up where I left off.
Right.
Much.
Also, stylistically,
stylistically, I don't want to be.
There's like a domino effect to each of these decisions. Sure.
Yeah, and you know, I already spent a lot of money over the years on this, but I wanted to make sure that next time I pick this up, I had enough in the bank, and I'm going to go and approach the right team or right artist.
Mm-hmm.
So, luckily enough, in 2017, I saved enough and I started pitching the idea on certain freelance websites called Upwork or Fiverr. Pitched the ideas that I'm looking for an artist. Before I even pick anyone, I want, here's 2 manuscript pages. Please draw them out. Right. And we'll see the style they've drawn it out in. And quite a few people, artists, did apply and they did some great work. But there was a team in Brazil called Line Art Studios. They did an amazing piece of work, you know, with those pages. Even though it was in black and white, there was no color involved, but I could see the style they were drawing the pages, and I went with them, and I actually picked them. They started with issue chapter 5 because already had chapter 1, 2, 4, and they started with chapter 5. So I'm like, yeah, carry on with chapter 5 and
right
on. And then I think when we got to chapter 9, I said, okay, I've reworked chapters 1 to 4 again of the change, and because I knew the way I was working with them was very good. You know, they started with the sketch, then they'll send it back, I'll review it, they'll make the changes, then they'll do the inking and do the whole process. And you should see my spreadsheet, it's got literally lines and pages of yeses and noes and everything, but they took feedback really well. And they did great, great, great work on it. So that allowed me to change chapters 1 to 4 because again the styling was slightly different from chapter 1. So I can use that in the process of their styling, and that gave me a chance to rework the script, the manuscript, sure. from not being November 9 to being the main event in one go, like you see
right.
today.
Right. So one of the most common, I guess, commonly referenced artistic works of poker in the world, when people think of it, not, you know, as the game that it is, but as an art form, is the film Rounders in 1998. Yeah. Are you a fan of the film? Did that yeah. play any role as far as storytelling and inspiring you?
Yeah. As I said, I've always been a fan of kind of gambling or casino movies, you know, watching the original Casino with Robert De Niro, Joe Pesci, Sharon Stone, that drove the understanding of Las Vegas and the mafia kind of thing.
Right.
But Rounders was something different. I was never expecting, I was a fan of Matt Damon as an actor, watched many movies, Good Will Hunting. But when you see Matt Damon and John Malkovich on a poker table, you know, big great actors at that time playing poker, of course I didn't know what Texas Hold'em was at that time. It was 98, I think I was 16, you know, quite young to understand I understand that, you know, ace is a great card, flushes and straights and full houses win what they win, but how they were betting and playing that game was new to me. So I had to watch it a number of times to understand what's that they're doing,
right? Right.
But I was an absolute fan of the movie, you know, watching Ed Norton being the friend that, you know, he's a friend but gets you in trouble kind of thing. And a lot of people have that over the years, not into the poker industry, but everywhere really. And that kind of drives the main characters, the way he thinks and where he wants to pursue in his life, poker or without, you know. So
yeah.
Really enjoyed that. And there was a clip, there was a couple of clips in that movie where they showed it when Johnny Chan won his World Series title. I think it was the second year he won it, and the way he was very calm and they were talking about it in the movie is like,
right.
I'm watching them watching Johnny Chan. It was really fun watching. And then there was the story where Matt Damon played again with Johnny Chan and
sure.
stuffed him, and I was like, oh, that's really, you know, really exciting to watch.
Yeah. For sure. Well, in poker, you know, players to be successful often have to change gears. So a little bit of a hard pivot here, but you'll see hopefully where we're going. Anish, your real world profession is as an e-commerce business analyst. What is that? And, you know, before we get into like the how that's related to the book and stuff, what roles have you sort of played, you know, within your profession over the years?
Yeah, so e-commerce business analyst. So I join certain retail companies, clothing, fashion brands, or home furniture companies. Give you an example, Jimmy Choo. You know, it's a world brand. I worked with them to improve their website. You know, they have projects around their website to online shopping. So customers go onto their website and they want the best experience ever. I'm there to make sure whatever projects they have, it works smoothly. But I'm always thinking about the business as well as the customer as well. And I'm there to understand the processes, any gaps in not just on the website, but in the business, like what are they missing? If it's something to do with, oh, you have more reviews, or the button over there is not the right color or something like that. That's sure. where I come in and help improve those processes.
The reason I particularly brought that up is that, you know, business analyst seems to be far more of like an exact sciences, like a math oriented line of work, whereas a Final Nine comic is much more of like a humanities, like an artistic form of an expression. Can you talk a little bit about that dichotomy?
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, what I'm always the middle person when it comes to that. So I always picture what needs to be in a design point of view, as well as the maths behind it, you know, the data behind everything, how many people are driving into the retail websites from a mobile perspective, desktop or tablet. And then, but what do they see? How do they see things? So that kind of the design point of view. A lot of my projects have always kind of kind of the customer journeys.
Right. Very interesting. Okay. So the next thing I'm going to ask sort of combines a few things. You know, it may sound a little long-winded, but hopefully you'll see where I'm getting at. Obviously, the Final Nine has been sort of a passion project of yours. You've mentioned obviously the need to stay on budget. You've mentioned the whole idea of, you know, making sure you've got enough funds in your account to do it. Obviously, you know, beyond the time, the effort, you know, the blood, sweat, and tears, a lot of money has gone into it. And I don't, you know, really even care. I don't want to discuss the exact amount, but, you know, obviously so much dedication and drive has to go into a project like this. And, you know, we all know, everyone in the Card Chat audience of the world, not every single book is going to be on the bestseller list, especially something with such a narrow niche. Obviously, we hope you sell, you know, millions of copies, but this does seem to be a project that's more than just about making money to you. What are your hopes and dreams for the Final Nine now that it's been published and that, you know, the work part of it and creation part of it has, you know, you've crossed that finish line. What are you hoping to get at it?
There was two things, actually. One, years ago, as I said, I'm a part-time poker player, and I love the game. I love the hit. Now I know so much about the history, about the WSOP, Las Vegas and all that. I love the industry. But I knew that I would never be a full-time player or a regular player, mm-hmm. or a player that people are going to notice. And I told this, you know, in the beginning stages of when I was actually just putting the characters together, I was speaking to a friend, and I said, I don't think I'll be that person. But I want to be known as the person who wrote the first graphic novel about poker. Mm. So when someone mentions it, goes, oh, that's Anish who's written this. They're like, oh, yeah, that's who he is. And that kind of gets me in the poker world. And that's where, you know, when they say, you know, when it comes to a book and my name, they're like, yes, that's how I was going to join. And that's how I get recognized. And that's who I wanted to be, a kind of an inside outside in the poker world, of that industry. You know, I'll be playing here and there, but that's who I wanted to be in that poker community.
That's pretty cool. That's I guess a little bit about personal legacy, you know, leaving your mark on the industry.
Yeah, because you know, in the poker world, you know, people win championships, people win bracelets or big tournaments, but there are thousands and thousands of players that still are not talked about, but they're really good players, like a lot of cash players that don't play a lot of tournaments, but they only play cash, but they're very good players. But we never talk about them, and there's loads of them. But when it comes to this kind of unique book that I put together, a lot of people have written books about poker, but not in the format that I've done it. And that's what kind of gets me slightly ahead of someone doing something new. Sure. To the industry. And the other part of what the next goal is, I may have mentioned this before. I used to work in TV a long time ago, back in 2005, between 2005, 2008. That's why I was writing ideas down. Poker wasn't just one idea. That there was many ideas I had, was to write certain short films, short stories, anything that I can put within a budget or something at that time. Sure. But my, you know, I've had a creative mind for many, many years. So when I decided to write this book, I was like, you know what, I'm going to write the book as a comic book. But then I'm hoping that eventually it becomes more than that in a different media, in a film media or a TV media. Now, back in 2008, I was thinking a movie, because that's everyone's thoughts. But now, as times have changed, a lot more people watch TV shows. You got even the biggest actors in Hollywood now doing TV. Stallone, for instance, you know, you'll never expect to see Stallone. And look at him, he's in a TV show. Kevin Costner doing the same thing. And, you know, people have pivoted to different medias when they thought TV's no good, but now it's the big thing. And I'm hoping that because of the 13 chapters I have, it can easily blend in into a TV show with some slight changes to make the audience watch it correctly. But you know, it's there to work out.
Sure. Well, one chapter closes and the next chapter is yet to come. Folks, I want to say thank you very much for tuning into another episode of Cards Chat. Of course, thanks again so much to Anish Patel. Guys, if you want the conversation to continue, well, you're in luck. We've got even more Anish Patel for you in the form of questions from our community exclusively on the Cards Chat YouTube channel. So head on over to YouTube to check that out. And don't forget, you can always submit questions for our guest yourself over on the Cards Chat Poker Forum. Guys, please be sure to give us a good review on iTunes and spread the word via your social media channels if you'd like the show. Until next time, I'm Robbie Straczynski. You can follow me on Twitter at CardPlayerLife. I wish you all a wonderful day. Cards Chat, the friendliest poker podcast in town from the world's number one poker community.